Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey,
so he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome to another edition of the Steelers Final Score. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Christopher Carter, also of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. But there is a lot to talk about in this Week 12 back-and-forth affair between the Seattle Seahawks and Pittsburgh Steelers. It saw the Steelers lose and their record fall to 6-5 after a 39-30 loss. There were seven lead changes in the game, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, there's a lot of different areas that you can point to, that you can talk about, that you can ponder in terms of what went wrong, what went right, what could have been done differently. There's a million of them, and if you want to call in, you are more than welcome to do so. The phone number is 347-850-8581. Again, that's 347-850-8581. And while we have while we're waiting for Chris to get on the air here, I'll talk quickly about some of my own personal thoughts on the game. I think that one thing we have to realize about this game is that it's easy to second-guess decisions. And I know a lot of people are going to be calling in, talking about the fake field goal. I was not happy with the call. I think we're going to talk about that at length. A lot of people are going to ask about not going for the touchdown on that final offensive possession, instead kicking the field goal. Chris Boswell giving that, basically cutting the lead down instead of going for the win. There's going to be a lot of things to talk about today, and by all means, you're going to get a chance to. Again, the phone number is 347-850-8581. Again, that's 347-850-8581. Chris is on the line, but he's dealing with some callers that are already lighting up the phones, so by all means, call in. I think one of the most disappointing things for me in this game is that it definitely negates some really good performances by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the most important, in my opinion, was none other than Marcus Wheaton. Marcus Wheaton, who, let's be honest, had basically been left for dead in the Steelers offense when it comes to the players like Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, who are repeatedly stealing the show. He had 9 receptions for 201 yards and a touchdown. He was targeted 13 times. You could definitely tell that's the way they were looking. And his seems like his offensive output was for naught based on the fact that the Steelers weren't able to come away with the victory. And because of that, it was really, really disappointing to see him not get the credit. Now, he's going to get the credit. He's going to be talked about on shows like ours, on nationally syndicated shows, make his name mentioned. But it's not going to be talked about when Russell Wilson throws for 5 touchdowns, Doug Baldwin has the game-winning touchdown, and it really just tarnishes what was a pretty good offensive performance by the Pittsburgh Steelers. As good as the offensive performance was, Roethlisberger throwing over 450 yards, Wheaton over 200, D'Angelo Williams doing a great job, both running in short yardage and catching the ball in the backfield. The one issue that you have is the turnovers. Now, before I get into that, let's bring in Chris. You're there. What's going on, bud? I know it's disappointing. What are you thinking after the game?
Let a few mistakes get away from them. They had a lot of opportunities out there. Surprised to see so many turnovers, like you were just saying. But, you know, there's a lot of question marks left after that game. You know, how bad is Ben's concussion? Does he have a concussion? You know, what happened? You know, everyone's questioning whether should we have kicked the field goal? Should we just gone for it with our regular people? You know, should we have gone for it at the end of the game? Lots of questions, lots left out there. But, you know, this is why, you know, the Seattle Seahawks have been to back-to-back Super Bowls, and Russell Wilson is a fighter. They are known to jump on other teams' mistakes. The Steelers didn't bring their A game, and they lost because of it.
No, and all the talk that we've had so far on the show, and we've only been on the air for maybe 5 minutes, has been on the offensive side of the football. Not even talking about the defense, which I'll tell you what, their head coach put a lot of faith in them, and they dropped the football, and that's obviously not that's a proverbial football that they dropped. We're going to talk about all this stuff with callers, and again, if you want to call in, you can, 347-850-8581. Let's get our first caller on the air. We have, excuse me, Stephen from Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, I bet. Basically, yeah, I was just my thoughts on that game is I did see a lot of good things. You know, I'm trying to be positive about this game. I did like what I seen from Jesse James. Heath Miller got hurt. I think he stepped in and played well. I think he could, you know, definitely be the future at our tight end position. So I'm happy about that. Marcus Wheaton, basically, like you were saying, it was his coming out day. Ben finally clicked with him. Big game. There were a bunch of people did a lot of good things. Sherman did seem to, other people may say otherwise, but he did seem to shut Antonio Brown down in my eyes. Brown might have been open. Sherman might have got away with a couple, pass interferences, little touches here and there that I'm not a big stickler on. I'm just about football, but Sherman played good D on him, man, and that's the way I've seen it. But to me, man, it goes back to this is Ben Roethlisberger's career. He just simply is not good in the red zone, and I'm tired of making excuses for him. He will get you to the red zone. He's the best in the league at, he'll throw a deep ball, the big play, but those big plays aren't going to sustain us. You know, I think that we have to methodically move the ball down the field, play ball control, and play defense. But the problem is, obviously, we can't play defense. We have an outstanding rush defense. I mean, it's money. You know, we shut that read option down. And, you know, earlier in the week, I could have swore if we shut that read option down like I knew we would, we was going to win this game. I thought it was for sure guaranteed, but I don't know. I just didn't see Russell Wilson throwing 5 touchdowns. And this is, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about improvement. I just wanted to see improvement, but it's not there, man. Blake, he's bad. Mitchell, he ain't much to brag about either. I mean, you know, the loss of Trump, I mean, we have a bunch of big losses in the secondary that, you know, we just ain't been able to replace. It's real bad. It's the worst in the league in my mind. We can't even cover Doug Baldwin. That's sad. there ain't no other way to break it. Mike Tomlin, I don't even want to really get into that. I mean, he irritates me on some of the calls he makes. I like his aggressiveness to a certain degree. But if you're going to be aggressive, when there's 3 minutes left and your defense is playing like shit, why wouldn't you go for it again? That just didn't make sense to me. What makes you think that we're going to hold them when we couldn't hold them all game and gave up 39 points? But yet you want to give the ball back to them. That I didn't understand. There's just some things that he does that, you know, the whole situation with Boykin. I mean, the guy had the most interceptions, I think, in the NFL at the slot corner position last year, and they won't allow him to play. He wants to play Blake. I don't understand his decisions. Is anything going to change? That's my question.
All right, well, Stephen, we appreciate the phone call, obviously. Thank you for calling, and you got a lot off your chest. And that's part of the reason why we have this show, is for fans to get stuff off their chest. A few points that you mentioned that I think are worth talking about. Positive would be Jesse James' performance. I think that what he said, the caller Stephen said at the very beginning, was that Jesse James has improved immensely, and he showed another great block where he was one-on-one with Bennett on the outside, and he held him up, allowed Roethlisberger to deliver the pass. He's improving in the area that they said he needed to improve on. which is clearly his blocking. He had a nice catch, showed some tough yards after the catch. He certainly is stepping up. In terms of the pass defense, I've said it all season. If they don't get turnovers, they're in trouble. And this is a perfect example. They've been giving up yardage all year, but if they don't get the key turnover, the defense is going to struggle, and that's exactly what happened today when the Seattle Seahawks didn't turn the ball over, and they gashed the Seattle Seahawks. Chris, any thoughts before we get our next caller? We got a lot waiting.
We got a lot waiting. As far as the secondary, they quote unquote gave up the bunt. It was a bad series of plays on their part. Ross Cockrell, today he looked like an undrafted free agent, probably for the first time all season in my eyes. Antoine Blake, he gives up plays. But like you said, this team is about making plays and making the key turnovers happen. And there was a period where they were forcing several three and outs, and they were playing solid defense. And they almost forced a turnover with a forced fumble. But when you put them in a situation where the offense makes turnover after turnover after turnover against another offense that has playmakers on it like Russell Wilson, and the guys that are experienced and can get the job done, you're asking a lot of this defense. They're not elite in the sense that they can shut anybody down. I think that they're talented in the sense that if they can force turnovers, and when they do, and as long as they're not asked to do too much, like the offense keeps committing turnovers like they did today, then I think they stand a really good chance. But outside of that, yeah, you're going to see them give up a lot of yards. If the offense doesn't come to help, there's going to be days like this where it just looks rough for them, and they certainly looked rough throughout, especially in the second half when things just exploded.
Absolutely. If you want to call in, you can, 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. Chris will talk to you off the air. Get your information. If you have to hold for a few minutes, please do. We'll get you on the air. Let's get our next caller here. We have Carmine from St. Petersburg. What's up, Carmine?
Hey, guys. As always, thanks for taking my call. I got a few things to get to, but first, I can't say that I agree with a couple things I've heard so far. I really have no issue going for the field goal late. It made sense. I mean, if the defense can get a stop, it works. They didn't. The early fake field goal, I mean, it could have worked if it was executed a little better. What I didn't understand at the time was the pre-snap shifting. I thought it had better success rate if they'd just had Jones attempt a pass from the holder position, I guess. But that said, I think at points today, our defense, specifically the secondary, Cockrell, were exposed. Gay and Allen, they looked out of place at times. But I won't go as far as the last caller and say that it's the worst secondary in the league. Mitchell, he's played very solid. And our secondary, like it or not, based on scheme, is predicated on physical corners and elite safeties. We only have one elite safety this year, and that's Mitchell. Shazier, he's basically helped almost play safety this year, and I don't think it's a coincidence that when he got injured, the secondary was even more exposed than it had originally been this game. But it's worked when he's been able to play. He's just not always healthy. But that said, I know it's loaded, but I had said on Twitter earlier this week, try to get the message out, that this is a game we could lose simply because of the way the tiebreakers are working in the AFC and the fact that the Cardinals beat the Bengals last week. I mean, it's a tall task, but if we win out, we're all but assured no worse than a wild card. Went out and get some help. Specifically starting tonight, a New England win, a Bengal loss to Cleveland and Baltimore, and a Bengal win against Denver. I mean, that's four games in five-plus weeks that we don't control. But that and winning out, we're the two seed. So I mean, dropping to eighth in the conference now, it doesn't scare me yet. I mean, maybe it should, I don't know, but the fact that we're anywhere between, you know, 2-8 as of now it looks, New England's about the only team that's locked anything up. So, I don't know.
You're right, Carmine. When you come with the AFC playoff picture, I mean, you know, obviously, as the editor of the website, we write those articles about the playoff picture. We write the articles about who to root for. There's still a lot of football left to be played. And honestly, when it comes to concerning yourselves with the playoff picture, it really doesn't have to happen until there's about 3 weeks left and you're really looking at, okay, who are the remaining opponents? But this was going to be a difficult game for Pittsburgh regardless, whether the Seahawks were even a 2-win team compared to a 5-5 team. Going into Seattle, playing that team on the road, Pittsburgh's record on the road going across country has never been very good. I think that, honestly, the Steelers and the tiebreakers, because, yes, in terms of why did they move to the number 8 spot, well, it's because the Jets have a better conference record, the Texans have a better conference record, and the Chiefs at least hold a head-to-head matchup win over Pittsburgh. So what they need to do is exactly what you said. They need to control their own path, their own destiny, so to speak. It starts next week on Sunday Night Football against the Indianapolis Colts, where it looks like Matthew Hasselbeck, who's found the fountain of youth, is going to be leading the Colts into Heinz Field. It's a game you have to win, plain and simple. You have to move to 7-5 next week if you want to be considered a legitimate threat in the AFC. And if you lose that game, well, you might as well start worrying about the season, because that's going to put you at 500 and you're behind the eight ball. Chris, what do you think?
I think it's a lot to ask for other teams right now to lose. Right now, the Steelers can't be focused on the 2 seed, let alone just winning the AFC North. They need to be focused on how are they going to beat the Colts, and you know, making the next footstep so that they can get in the playoff picture. What I was really afraid of was if we lost this game, that the Chiefs, who seem to be red hot right now, kept moving, and they're keeping moving. And now with their tiebreaker over us, because good old Paul Zeiss from Pittsburgh Radio said that game did not matter. Now they have a huge tiebreaker over us. So if it comes down to us, deja vu, the Chiefs are going to be a playoff problem for us down the line. So, you know, it's going to be – I think that it's a lot to ask for right now. There's still a lot of football to be played. None of this really matters at this point in time, because the playoffs, it doesn't matter what seeds you are in week 12. It matters what seeds you are after week 17. So lots to play, but, yeah, there's good reasons to be scared right now if you're one of the people that look that far down.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. And, Carmine, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. As always, make sure you keep listening. Call back again. Let's get our next caller, Hall of Fame caller Vito from New Jersey. What's up, Vito?
Gentlemen, how are you? Right, listen.
All right.
I know we lost. It was upsetting, but I don't agree with what the first guy said about Ben Roethlisberger. Let me tell you something. You guys are Pittsburgh Steelers fan. How many years are you guys fans of the Steelers?
26,
my whole life.
How many times did we get to the big games before Ben and lose? With Cordell Stewart, Neil O'Donnell. Who was the other quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Who's
Bobby
the only Brisk guy that... Tom Zach?
Tommy Maddox.
Are those guys Hall of Fame quarterbacks? Did they ever reach their full potential, earning $18 million a year? Right?
Yeah.
How many people do you know
right
in this world that ever reached their true potential and they're really achieving their dream, doing what they love to do? So let me ask you this. There are only 5 quarterbacks in this league that are phenomenal, right? I would take Ben every day of the week. I don't give a crap what anybody says. He's a Steelers fan. How many times did we make it to the Super Bowl in the last decade with Ben? 3? We won 2? Put any other quarterback out there on this team. Let's see where we go. Let's see what kind of season we have. You don't even have a chance when he's not in the game. Look how different our team is when he's not in the game. We lost games with Michael Vick that we should have won. We lost another game when Ben, right? We went 2-2 without him. If he's there, we probably go minimum 3-1. I mean, the guy was battling all the way through the end. Put up 450 yards. How many quarterbacks do that? No one's ever thrown all year for 450 yards against the Seahawks. So he's a battler. He's the type of guy. He's a leader. He will fight to the end. Even when he can't go in the game, the guy's going to battle. Look, we made mistakes today. He made some plays. You know, he threw an interception where Brown fell down. Is it 100% his fault? I don't think so. But when he has to make the big plays, I mean, he did some great things where he was checking behind him to see if the guy was coming after him. I mean, those are veteran moves that he makes that keeps that drive going to even put us in a position to win. So, the final play of the game, where that drive came down to a block that we missed that allowed them to get the go-ahead touchdown. That's not Ben's fault. That's our defense's fault. So you win as a team, you lose as a team. They played a tough team. Let's face it, guys. They're a great defense. They have a lot of great weapons on the defensive side of the ball. And to face them and to put up 30 points and to put up 450 yards, I think that's a great statement. And if someone else doesn't like Ben, hey, then go out and put Tommy Maddox in and let's see how far we go.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you know, is you bring up a good point. Yeah, they scored 30 points on this defense. And the thing is that they essentially gift-wrapped three touchdowns for them based off of turnovers. And only two of those were on Ben Roethlisberger. So I don't think anyone that watched this game, whether you're a Steelers fan, Seahawks fan, or just a casual football fan, wouldn't watch this and say, you know what, the Steelers are the better team, or at least the better offense. They gift-wrapped a couple points to them. Chris, what do you think?
I agree with that. And also, you got to take in consideration, they put up 30 points without a ground game. The Steelers knew that their ground game with Denzel Williams, best succeed. A lot of noise back there. There we go. But everyone knows that with D'Angelo Williams in the game, the Steelers' running game is better when you have a fullback in front of him and you're lined up in like a power situation and you give him a chance to run straight forward and make plays that way. Out of the shotgun, he's less effective. He's not Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers don't want to put Ben under center as much because of his foot situation and his knee situation and apparently not his head situation. So they essentially abandoned an entire part of their offense and still put up 30 points. I mean, and they weren't garbage time points. Each of these were responses. Their first two touchdowns were responses to turnovers that gave the Seahawks the lead. Then when you had the best throw to Marcus Wheaton was unbelievable. He put it on the money while on the run, and it couldn't have been anywhere else. It was perfect. I would not say by any means that Ben Roethlisberger had a horrible game. He did not have a great game because he still turned the ball over twice. So, you know, a few as you could say, you could talk about the slip ball, you know, that kind of stuff happens. That's just a mistake he has to get back. But the Sherman interception, he threw Antonio Brown to the ground, and I don't know how they missed that as a call. It was very blatant. I don't know how anyone didn't see it, and any of the referees didn't see it. We certainly saw it. But, you know, there were a lot of things that didn't go Ben's way, but I'm not particularly angry at him for today's loss. I'm not putting this on his back the whole way. I do think he made mistakes that contributed, but he also made several plays that kept this team alive. So I'm with you, Vito. Anyone that wants to bail on Roethlisberger, you can do that if you want, but I'm sticking with the guy.
Yeah, Vito, thanks for the phone call. We know we'll be talking to you probably on Wednesday night for our next show, The Standard is the Standard. I want to talk quickly before we get to our next caller. They just don't throw flags on Sherman. I mean, that guy was all over Brown on more than one occasion, on his shoulders, on his, you know, over his back. They just don't throw flags on him. And maybe it's because of the stigma of Richard Sherman. Maybe it's the Legion of Boom. Maybe it's that they're playing at home. I don't know what it is, but it's really tough to watch as a football fan when you see guys getting flagged like that regularly on Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays. And you're watching Richard Sherman doing the same thing, and yeah, he's good. I mean, he has done the best job of anyone that's gone up against Antonio Brown to date that I can think of. And I'm not saying that he didn't perform well, because I thought he did. But I also think that there's this air about certain players. Levis is another one. They get the benefit of the doubt, and it's frustrating. Yep. I'm sure Antonio Brown is frustrated, and I'm not making excuses because I thought that they had plenty of opportunities. Heck, even Cam Chancellor's last interception on the sideline, which was reviewed, and that ball hit Mark Davis Bryant square in the chest. Square in the chest. So,
yes,
I don't know, Chris. I don't know what you think about that.
I think that Richard Sherman, he is still one of the best corners in the league. There's, you know, he was not an overnight sensation. He developed over time, and he's made several plays. And he knows how to lock people down. However, like you said, he gets a lot of favor with – I mean, he was holding Antonio Brown the entire game, pass after pass that was thrown here. And still this, to Antonio Brown, had Antonio Brown not lost Ben Roethlisberger at some point this season, he still had his six catches for over 50 yards. It wasn't like he took Antonio Brown out of the game. Antonio Brown still made several big catches. And I think if he gets called for a lot of those holding penalties, it's a completely different game. And some of them weren't even holding. They were straight pass interference or just, you know, just doing something that he had to do to take Antonio Brown away because Antonio Brown had it beat several times. But, you know, it's one of those things that you have to overcome it if you want to be a great team, because there's going to be teams like that. The Patriots get away with it with Tom Brady. Peyton Manning got away with the things with you know, people would hit him during the play and they call it late. Niners fans will tell you, though, they're out of the season right now. The Niners had a sack on Carson Palmer, and they got called for roughing the passer. I mean, he legit had the ball in his hands, and no one understands that. There are certain people that get a protection, they get a zone, and there are certain people who don't. And, you know, that happens with the game. You have to move past it. But, yes, certainly, I think that was a big factor as to what happened with Richard Sherman and Antonio Brown. But side note also with that, I was very surprised to see Richard Sherman shadowing Antonio Brown. The way that they've played, no matter when they've gone up against Calvin Johnson, you know, Julio Jones, when they've gone up against the big receivers, Richard Sherman sticks to his side. He doesn't follow around. He followed Antonio Brown around all game. And I was very surprised to see them bail out of their normal packages to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that Richard Sherman performed well today. Just some questionable calls there, or non-calls, I should say. Let's get to our next caller here. We have Dan from Orlando. Wants to talk about play calling. Dan, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have a whole bunch of comments, but I'll just stick to the couple about play calling. There's good and bad on both sides. Ben made lots of mistakes. He played well. Bill Bryant got a couple of catches, but he missed so many. But mainly, like, with the play calling, like, that first trick play, like, seems to be possible to take a lot of weird trick play calls at just, like, early, just in the middle of the first quarter, and then it goes badly. And, that cost us 3 points, and then they got 7 off it. But then at the end, I thought we should have gone to a touchdown because we were near the end zone. But then when it turned out that Ben was hurt, maybe they just went for 3 because he was hurt and he wasn't able to play. So maybe you can forgive him on that. And then just another comment is just like defense is just seems like a mess right now. And like I say, like Antoine Blake giving up has given so much of a cushion to those receivers, like you've mentioned so many times, like he plays off so far, and then they just run around him. And then Shazier was hurt, maybe that hurt too. I don't know. There's a lot going on for good and bad.
Yeah, no, I think I want to talk about your the play call first before we bring up anything about Antoine Blake in the secondary. Yeah, bring up a good point. There is a chance that on that after that third down run, which Roethlisberger scrambled, was stopped short of the yard to gain, which I think was on the 2 or 3 yard line, that he came off the field and said that he's having some type of, you know, concussion-like symptoms, and the NFL protocol means that he has to come off the field immediately. Ryan Shazier obviously had to go through that as well. You know, that's a point I didn't even think about, and it could have had a very big significant role in Mike Tomlin's decision-making. And so I think that's something the fans should keep in the back of their mind. If Roethlisberger is not healthy enough to go out and throw the football, are you going to put a cold Landry Jones in there to try and make a game-winning touchdown pass? Most coaches are going to say, let's kick the field goal. Let's hope our defense can get a stop. It obviously didn't happen. Hindsight's always 20/20, folks. But you know what? That's a good point. Chris, what do you think?
When you looked at that hit on Ben Roethlisberger, there was at one point, I didn't think it at first, but when you saw the replay and you saw how he went down and then I saw his leg go limp, I think he lost consciousness for half a second there. I think he legit didn't know where he was for a little bit, and then he took the time to be down and gather himself and be like, all right, this is what that just happened. I can't show that my head hurts, otherwise they're going to take me out. And he was able to focus, get up, and lead his team down the field. Didn't get the touchdown, but I do think that played a factor. Tomlin was like, I don't want to get my guy killed. And Tomlin said this on several occasions, like when Ryan Clark had sickle cell in Denver, he said, this game is not worth your life. And I think when they had time to assess Ben on the sideline, I think Tomlin pulled him because he's like, I'm not going to lose you just because, you know, you wanted to be tough and we might be able to come back down from 2 scores in under 2 minutes. You know, this is not about our lives right now. You know, go get checked. And I think that was what that was about. And I also think that, yeah, I agree, because you've seen Tomlin. Man's aggressive at every turn. He always makes sure that he always wants to give his offense the best chance to put up the points and to win the game, but and to go for two and all that. I really believe that in that situation, that if Ben Roethlisberger hadn't taken that hit to his head that he took, that he would have had no problem and he would have called it. But Tomlin's worried about his players, especially his all star quarterback. I think that was part of that decision. And personally, I'm okay with that, because I'm on the side of this is none of this is worth your life.
Yeah, and Dan, to talk about the secondary for a second, I've never been one that's going to second guess the coaches that are there and that are at practice and are putting the players out on the field.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where you have to say to yourself, at what point is enough enough? At what point have we seen enough that, you know what, we're going to give another guy a shot, because can it get any worse? And here's a perfect statistic to illustrate why I think it's time now. If you're going to put Brandon Boykin in, the time is now. Antoine Blake, it's been reported he has a fractured thumb, that he's been playing with it for weeks. It seriously looks like he's impacting his tackling, or at least his willingness to engage in a sound wrap-up tackle. Chris Bradford from the Beaver County Times tweets out that the Steelers' defense has yielded 966 net passing yards in the past three games. Again, folks, it's 966. It's almost 1,000 yards passing in the past three games. That is absurd. And so if that means that maybe you put Robert Golden in for a little bit instead of Will Allen to see how he does, then that's what you do. If that means that you put in Brandon Boykin to see what he can do, can it get worse than 1,000 yards in three games? I don't think so. I mean, you're giving up Johnny Manziel type of stuff, 370-some yards from Manziel in Week 10. I have serious questions about that, and I think that you have every right to say, you know what, maybe it's time for a change. As always, Dan, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling in. Hope you call back again.
I plan to. Thank you.
If you want to call in, you can. We've cleared some lines open for you all. It's 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. Let's get to our next caller. We have Bryce in Brooklyn. Bryce, go ahead. You're on with Jeff and Chris.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Pretty good, man.
All right.
What's going on with you?
All right, right, yeah. Doing good, even though that game was a punch in the gut. So 2 points. One, I had to, you know, I called in Wednesday night, and I mentioned look out for Darius Heyward-Bey and Marcus Wheaton, where Heyward-Bey didn't have a big game, but you knew you were going to have to get some contributions from other guys, and Wheaton was really, really big. I like to see the Steelers continuously attack the middle of the football field more. I think they can do that with Wheaton and with Jesse James, who played well. I think they definitely found something, and hopefully they can go ahead and keep that going. It was good to see them get those guys involved, even though we just kind of abandoned the run game, where I think, I like to say this, we got a little bit of zany Todd, where we started throwing it, and he just said, screw it, we're just going to run it. I mean, we're just going to throw it and kind of abandon the run game, so we didn't really have balance. We were moving the ball, just the turnovers were killers.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I will say that you did call it on Wednesday night about the auxiliary players and the secondary guys. Wheaton had himself a day, and it was a shame. It was an honest shame. I said at the beginning of the show that his 200-yard performance and a touchdown and what could have been even an amazing catch on the sideline if it had not been overturned, Wheaton showed up big in this game, and it was really a shame to see the Steelers end up losing. And I thought that it was kind of a turning point. I'm going to kind of send a question back to you because I know that you're a very level-headed caller. You've called into the show multiple times. Do you think it's possible for a game that is as dismal in some areas as this one, the Steelers giving up 39 points, getting gashed through the air, do you think that as a whole, this team, this could be viewed as a stepping stone despite a loss?
You know what's funny? You would bring that up. This game was very similar to the Saints game, and I feel last year, and I feel our offense played better. I think it can, but, you know, to what you just said before I got on the call, they need to make some tough decisions about that secondary. I mean, I know you're in practice, and I know they're saying, hey, we've seen Boykin in practice. He's not an outside guy. Like you said, he can't be much worse. You know, the axiom is if you're going to go down swinging. I brought this up weeks ago when I was talking with Danny. And look, play more aggressive in the secondary. If the guys get beat, they're getting beat anyway. But you let these guys get anywhere down the seam, and you let these guys get anywhere in the secondary, they're going to make plays. So I think this can be a stepping stone if Pittsburgh says, look, we've no margin of error. We've got to make some tough decisions so we can tighten some of these things up. We got to spread the football around, attack the middle of the field. We got to play more aggressive in the secondary. Hey, if we get beat, let's get beat jamming guys and getting our hands on them a little bit more and making them have to make some decisions and actually make some plays than just running around free and just doing anything they want to. I mean, that's like easy, like practice. So I actually believe it can be if they make some tough decisions. What do you think?
Well, Chris, I want to get your take on that same question. Do you think this game could be a stepping stone for the Steelers' 2015 team, despite them losing in the fashion they lost?
Oh, certainly. I mean, they're looking at this game. They know one thing that always encourages me is when I see how they react as a team to things. You don't see them fighting each other over things like you saw, you know, Antonio Gates and Phillip Rivers fighting, or how you see other teams fight sometimes, and you know, the Packers were knucking. When Landry Jones threw the interception, you saw Ben Roethlisberger, and then the Seahawks scored a touchdown. You saw a quick exchange if you were watching closely. Landry Jones, like, looks at Ben, and he's just shaking his head like that. Like, he looks like he says, that's on me, and Ben says, no, it's not. And he's like, you know, he's like trying to get his head out of that zone. I think that there are times where every great team, and I'm not saying that this team is great. I think they have the potential to be great, in the, you know, as the season goes on. But every great team has to have those learning moments. And this could be very, very much that. If you remember when the Steelers were 7-5 in 2005 when they lost to the Bengals, you know, they had to learn from their loss, and that happened. And I think that this is a great example of that. They played a good team, a team that's been very successful the past 2 years. They made several mistakes. They weren't out of this game by any means. They didn't. You know, it wasn't like this team was that much better than them. They had a few things go their way, and they made plays when we didn't. But in the same instance, we know that this team has the potential to beat anybody in the league. And the defense has a lot of questions right now after how Russell Wilson played. I thought they did a great job in the first half, despite, you know, the turnover with the interception from Landry Jones. I thought they did a great job limiting Russell Wilson early, but in the second half, it just seemed like the hinges came off. Even when Jimmy Graham came out the game, Doug Baldwin, I never pictured him getting three touchdowns. That just didn't seem like it. But you know, there's things to learn from, and best believe they're going to be learning. They know they got to win next week. There's no stop with this team. So I do think it's a stepping stone. Just hope that it's the last stepping stone of losses that they got to go through this season, so that we don't have to worry about, you know, falling any further in the playoff race.
Oh, and guys, real quick about the coaching. Real quick about the coaching decisions. You know, first and foremost, I think, you know, Keith Butler's got to continue to grow. And like you said, this could be a stepping stone. I know we play zone, and I know we've always been kind of a zone blitz team. But when you've got that back end zone covering you, you got to get up in these guys' faces, in the red zone. And you've got to challenge some receivers. You can't let these guys get anywhere they want to. They're getting in the seams inside the 20 and just catching easy touchdowns. I mean, they're not even contested. This is pro football, man. You can't do that. You got to go down swinging. And I think I don't think he trusts the secondary to really get up and be able to make plays. And if that's the case, then you're kind of dead in the water, because teams in the NFL are just going to move the football at will on you. And we've got to make some decisions there. And then Tomlin on the opposite end, you know, again, gets very herky-jerky with some of these decisions. Like, with the way that game is going, it reminded me of the Green Bay game, like when you kicked the onside kick in 2009. You know your defense is stopping them. I didn't have a problem with taking the points, but I think a better decision would have been, man, go for it, because you can't stop these guys. If you're just going to stand back and play zone, try to get the points and make it a shootout. So I'm hoping we can make better coaching decisions moving forward as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that, you know, Tomlin is a coach that coaches from his gut, and he says that in his press conferences. A lot of media members, like, laugh at that and kind of, you know, use that as hyperbole to a certain extent. But in the same instance, there's no logic behind or rhyme or reason behind some of these decisions that he makes. And so maybe that is truly where he is making these decisions from. He looks at the situation. He goes, you know what? I trust my defense. Kick it. And it's hard to disagree with that, because as a fan on the couch watching the game, it's easy for me to say, oh, yeah, you know, we should have gone for the touchdown. But in the same instance, if the Steelers stop the Seahawks on third down, get the football back with a chance to just get a field goal for the win, everyone's applauding him for such a great decision. So, as always, Bryce, we thank you for the phone call. Bakes, I'm sure we'll talk to you soon. If you want to call in, you can, 347-850-8581. We have some other callers to get to here. Let's talk to Jake in Hawaii. What's up, Jake?
Hey, good talk to you guys again. How you doing?
All right. Hanging in there.
Awesome. What's up?
Hey, so I know everyone's been beating on, you know, I know we lost and the defense had rough troubles on a lot of things, but I kind of want to go kind of in the left field out here and just say, you know, we've used a third-round pick. Do you think that our third-round pick, you know, the wide receiver, can do all right? Or do you think he has a chance to play as opposed to Brian dropping balls?
You're referring to Sammy Coates, I'm assuming?
Yeah, do you think Coates has a chance to play? Or, like, Coates. Do you think that Coates has a chance to play, or do you think he's just like a decoy for the most part? He's a big kid. He's got, like, he's got a lot of range. Do you think he's, like, dropping as much as Brian? Because Brian's been dropping like crazy.
Yeah, he was inactive today, so that wasn't even an option for him. I think that honestly, when they looked at him, they looked at him as a 2016 player. They have Darius Hayward-Bade around out their wide receiving crew, and I think they're looking for him to develop his rookie year, learn the tricks of the trade from some of the best, like an Antonio Brown, and then hopefully for next year, 2016, he's ready to actually contribute. He's only had one catch in this season. He hasn't been activated every single game. Like today, he was not. But at the same time, with Martavis Bryant, the way that his game is shaped right now, you take the good with the bad. You take the fact that, yeah, he dropped two very catchable passes today, maybe even a third, and you look at also the catches that he makes and the fact that the guy scores touchdowns at a ridiculous clip. He scored 14 touchdowns in his first 16 games, I believe. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I don't think that Sammy Coates is in their plans in 2015. Again, I think he's looking at 2017 for his chance to be an impact player because Darius Hayward-Bade likely will be gone, and then that would give you a receiving crew of Coates, Brown, Bryan, and Wheaton for 2016, which is a pretty good bunch. Chris, what do you think about that?
I think that Sammy Coates, like you said, I wouldn't call him a decoy. I'd say he was an investment that the team made for future receivers. One, because when you're looking at, you have Antonio Brown. He's on a current contract right now that he's not happy with because he knows he should be making more money. You know, it just worked in the Steelers' favor of when he signed his contract. And then last year, you had a guy rise on the team, Martavis Bryant. The Steelers have a lot of talent on their roster that is not signed too long, that aren't signed to long-term contracts, namely Le'Veon Bell, Martavis Bryant. They seem to be getting younger players every year, like Stephon Tuitt, who are rising up, and they're like, these are guys we have to sign when their rookie contracts are over, and that's going to take faith. And then you have a guy like Marcus Wheaton, who I've been saying for weeks that, you know, people are like, yeah, I'm not so high on him because he doesn't make plays. It's because these other guys are making plays, and when they needed him, he rose to the occasion today. I'm not sure if we can keep Marcus Wheaton after his rookie contract's up, and I said this in the offseason, I think with all the weapons, he's going to be gone. So the investment in the Sammy Coates was to address the future, I think, of saying, hey, if we have to trade away Martavis Bryant, if we can't hold on to Marcus Wheaton in free agency, you know, we need to keep developing our receiving core to stay young, to stay fresh, and have athletes. Plus, Sammy Coates is much like his readout coming into the draft was much like Martavis Bryant. Very fast, big, has a case of the drop seat, and is known for making the big plays. That's exactly what he was known for at Auburn. That's exactly what we expected him to be. And the only reason that Martavis Bryant made the impact he did is because people realized, I think, that I think the team realized, okay, we need some spark in the offense, and who we have right now is not getting it done. But Jeff, you're right. He has, I think, what, 13 touchdowns? 13 touchdowns on 14 now. It's 14 touchdowns in 15 games of his career, 16 games of his career, because now you're going to tack on today. But 14 touchdowns in 16 games, that's an insane pace for a guy that's still struggling with the drop seat in his second year in the league and has to play on an offense that, for the most part, has had Le'Veon Bell on to share the ball with, and Antonio Brown, who just goes off, you know, it seems like whenever he gets the chance. So I don't think he's a decoy. I think, like Jeff said, they're keeping him so that he can develop, and then maybe next year, if Darius Haywood Bay has to go, he's going to be stepping up, and then you got a series of wideouts that are very fast and very young.
Well, do you have this concern, though, that any point when the Steelers are picking third round, fourth round, the Steelers are picking progressive players or players that they can hope to progress, and the other teams are picking players they can plug and play right now, and we are just building a team that's not coming to fruition at, you know, 2015, 2016, and our concern is, like, we're building this team for 2019, it's not going to fit.
I wouldn't say that because you guys they picked Le'Veon Bell and he was an immediate impact player. Martavis Bryant was picked, I think, just because they knew what his talent was. He was an immediate impact player. Antonio Brown is the exact product of what you're talking about. He was picked in the sixth round a long time ago as a pair when they picked up him and Emmanuel Sanders after they lost Antonio Holmes after 2009. Now he's the best receiver in all of football. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's. The Steelers have to stay the course as far as Kevin Colbert's plan to build an ultimate team, but they also are picking guys who are making immediate impact. Look at Stephon Tuitt. He's a second-year player wrecking shop on the defensive line. Bud Dupree has 4 sacks this season and is a force on the outside. You know,
he's a first-round pick.
But that's the thing. Not every team's hitting in the third and fourth round. I mean,
yeah.
look at the receivers we've drafted over the years. Antonio Holmes was the only first-round pick, and he earned it with his Super Bowl MVP. But Hines Ward was a third-rounder. Antonio Brown's a sixth-rounder. Antoine Randall was a second-rounder. You know, there's guys that we pick that don't always work out immediately, but they're good players. I don't think that it's a case of they're trying to build later and they're giving up on now, or that they don't have enough. They're not picking enough players for now. I think that they have their plan and they're sticking to it. And I have no problem with the way Colbert picks. I think he's the best GM in football.
Okay.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think when you look at the NFL draft, it's just like play calling. It's just like coaching decisions. There's always other players available, and there's always people that are going to second guess every decision that you make. People are saying, you know, Shamarco Thomas, a third or fourth round draft pick, can't recall off the top of my head, that is basically a special teams player, and a lot of say, what a waste of a pick, and it's hard to disagree with that. But at the same time, you look at other situations where, you look at Kelvin Beachum, a seventh-round pick. You look at Ramon Foster, undrafted. You look at Antonio Brown, sixth-round draft pick. And some of these players have played significantly early in their career. So not every pick's going to be a home run. I think that you have a point that some of their mid-round picks have been very, very poor, especially in the secondary.
Yeah, I was talking about, like, Swede and, you know, like Lima Swede, Dree Archer. You know, and they were the mid-round picks. They were, like, going for the home run on those. And I just wonder if they were, like, going to continue that trendy thought or if they were just going to try to take solid players instead.
Well, I think that what you see in the third and fourth rounds, and not to get too far off the beaten path, but the talk after the game is when you look at the Steelers' draft philosophy, go back and look at even the last 5 years, in the third and fourth round is when they start to look at positional players. They always take the best player available in the first and second. In the third round is when they start to look at, okay, we need to identify a cornerback or a safety or even in some instances a wide receiver like they did this year with Sandy Coates. Whereas maybe it would be best for the team to stick with the best player available strategy throughout the draft, and that is something that I'm sure will be talked about ad nauseum leading up to the draft. But you bring up a good point nonetheless. We thanks for the phone call. Jake, we appreciate
Thank
it as
you.
Always. Let's get another caller on the air. I believe this gentleman was on hold. 607-425. Go ahead, John, with Jeff and Chris.
Call.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right, I guess we lost him. That's okay. If you want to call back, you can. 347-850-8581. Again, 347-850-8581. We have about 10 more minutes left in the show if you want to call in and get something off your chest. I think that we talked about a lot of stuff here. I mean, we had a lot of callers. I appreciate all the people that did call in. There really wasn't much that wasn't discussed, Chris, in my opinion. I think that this team defensively needs time for them to kind of have a gut check. It's time for them to say, you know what, we've been giving up a lot of yards through the air, and although that was okay for a long time because we were getting those key turnovers, because we were still winning football games, because we were keeping teams off of the scoreboard, maybe it's time that we start changing things. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you start going through the roster and inserting Brandon Boykin and inserting Robert Golden or anything like that. I think what that means is that the Steelers need to kind of go back and say what works, what doesn't work, and let's see what we can do to make everyone on the same page. I think with the Steelers' defense, and this has been a trend, it would be interesting to go back and see if you had access to all the games. The games where the Steelers look so confused are the games where the team literally just gets slaughtered, especially through the air. Go back to week one against New England Patriots. They were confused. You could clearly see them pointing, not knowing where to go. Early in this game, and even in the second half, it was a lot of the same. Guys were left uncovered. There were missed responsibilities and duties out there on the field. It was really disconcerting as a fan that follows the team so closely that this was happening in week 12. In week one, you look at it and say, well, it's week one, it's early, it's a brand-new coordinator, and now it's happening still in week 12. It's very disheartening, and I think that it's where the Steelers need to start. And so here you have a perfect opportunity. This loss was tough. It was tough. Why? Based on the fact that it's going across country against the Seattle Seahawks at their home field, which is a very difficult place to play. And I think that you looked at it and said, if there's a team, if the game's not going to lose in the last six, this is probably going to be one of them. So you come back home to Heinz Field next week with the Indianapolis Colts. You're not playing Russell Wilson. You're not playing Johnny Manziel. You're playing Matt Hasselbeck. So Matt Hasselbeck,
yep,
you want to get rid of the ball quickly. He's not going to run. He's not a mobile guy. The Steelers have a perfect opportunity on their plate, and that is simply get after the quarterback, stifle the run, force them to try to beat you through the pass, and let's see if this team's improved at all. Like I said earlier in the show, if they lose next week, yeah, it's time to start getting concerned about the playoff picture, because now you're going to be 6-6. Another conference loss is going to only worsen the tie-breaking odds that now the Steelers are in this big jumbled mess of 6-5 teams after the week 12 action is done. It's going to be a nightmare if they lose next week. Next week is a huge game, being at Heinz Field. Chris, what do you think about anything after the game next week? Whatever's on your mind, go ahead.
You know, when you're talking about next week, there's definitely a lot of potential there. And the defense, they know that they made a lot of mistakes today. They got eaten up. This is the worst that they've played all season. Definitely, it's the most points they've given up all season. Part of it was also, you know, the situations they were put in with the turnovers. But at the same time, you still doesn't take away the times of the season where they've been on point. They're a team they don't have the consistency of the 2004 defense, of the 2005 defense, of the 2008 defense. Defenses that we've seen recently in Steelers history that have been consistent and taken over games for them time and time again. This team still have to find their way. They still got a lot of young guys. And when that happens, when you have youth, it's tough to have consistency because they're not always going to be shut down amazing. But, you know, that doesn't excuse their performance today. If there's something else that I think that I just popped up on the Twitterverse of the ESPN on my phone. Mike Tomlin after the game, you know, he said that, you know, we weren't good enough to win today and simply dreaded the Seahawks for the win. You know, one thing that I thought that was crazy today was there were several calls that I did that just made me shake my head. You know, even last interception, Cam Chancellor looked like he landed out of bounds and the ball was being, you know, bobbled between him and Bryant. You know, with the whole complete catch thing, the Sherman that should have been interference, you know, Timmons pushing out of bounds, yada, yada. There's a lot of calls, but not one of them does he seem to be bringing them up as a reason why they lost. Whereas, you know, with the Seahawks in their past, their fans, you know, are still holding on to Super Bowl 40 as, you know, the greatest travesty, you know, in the history of the world. That's another reason why I love Mike Tomlin. He doesn't give anyone the opportunity to point the finger at him and say, like, you know, you're not focused on your craft, you're focused on what other people do. And I think it's fine when fans complain about it, when, like, Mike Holmgren was saying it during the game and after the game, and they weren't even bad calls that went against the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
You know, that's what that made me scratch my head as far as, like, you don't have time to do that. Mike Thomas, you know, he doesn't take that mess, and he knows that despite whatever call gets labeled against the Steelers, they got to come out and get it done, and we didn't today. There were several, even with the Wheaton catch, that, you know, he did bobble it, but, you know, there's a lot of things that you got a question with that. They still came out and they converted on that down and distance situation, and were able to get down into the red zone where they stalled and they kicked the field goal. I think that moving forward, Mike Thomas is going to have his team's head in a better situation than what most coaches would, because there were a lot of ways that the team could have fallen apart at the seams today, and they didn't. You know, I think they were still fighting to the very end. The defense certainly didn't make plays late, but the defense also forced, what was it, 4-3 and outs out of 5 possessions, you know, between the late first half and the early second half. Those were opportunities that the Steelers had to try and build a lead, and we really didn't do that on offense enough. I think we had just too many miscues, whether it was Bryant dropping a big pass, whether it was a ball slipping out of Ben's hands, whether, you know, it was Antonio Brown being thrown to the ground. There were plenty of chances that the offense, you know, had the opportunity to build the lead for the defense to have space to work with. And we know we don't have this elite defense. You got to take advantage of every opportunity your offense gets, and that's what didn't happen today. And that's where I point to as a contributing factor to it. And again, not saying Ben Roethlisberger sucks, not saying that, you know, he doesn't deserve to win, or we should be looking around for other quarterbacks or anything negative about the guy. But I do think that there were times where you needed him to be elite, and he wasn't at certain times, and that was a huge factor in today's loss. Does that mean that we'll lose other games like that? I don't think so, but I think that's a big factor going into this game. I'm hoping that against the Colts, that our defense can limit Matt Hasselbeck, and an offense that generally just hasn't been good this season, even with Andrew Luck in. Frank Gore has not been balling for them too well. T.Y. Hilton drops a lot of passes. Andre Johnson is non-existent for their offense. Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen aren't superstar tight ends like everyone thought they would be, and their defense isn't all that great either. This next week needs to be a big response game in primetime football for Pittsburgh, and I'm hoping that it is.
Okay, now let's get down to brass tacks here a little bit. Chris, before we end the show, you're going to have the winners and losers column up. I'm going to say by 9:30. I think that gives you plenty of time. I have that queued up for you on the website. Fantastic, even better. Let's talk about some winners and losers. Let's not do the spoiler thing. Let's give us a handful, a little bit of a taste, so to speak, of who you have in the winning column and who you have in the losers column after the Week 12 loss.
Winning column, you know, you got the obvious players. There's one guy that had 200 yards receiving, and I think that was his first ever 200-yard receiving career game. So career day for him, he's going to be on the list. There's going to be a defensive player on the list for what he was doing, and he made a few plays for the team. But I'm also going to give a big shout-out to this is my big spoiler, the offensive line to me. I was happy with how there were several plays that they controlled the line of scrimmage when it was absolutely needed. On the third down sneaks from Ben, I think he had two big ones. They were able to convert both times because they got the surge, and they protected Ben generally for most of the game. Seattle got in for some sacks. You know, I think how many sacks did they get? Hold on, I'm trying
to find
two. They got two sacks against a pass rush that, you know, I was really worried about their pass rush in this game, especially with how our offensive line has looked in the past with Charlie Villanueva. I thought Villanueva really stepped up today. He went up against Cliff Averill. That dude is no joke. And yes, he gave up a sack, and the sack he gave up was pretty bad, but there were several times where he stoned him and Irvin. Marcus Gilbert was controlling his guys. Even there were times where Cody Wallace, I was like, hey, I like you right now, because most of the times I don't like Cody Wallace. But, big shout-out to the Beefaloes, the offensive line. They don't ever get enough credit. As an offensive lineman, former offensive lineman myself, back in the high school days, I was one thing that all offensive linemen know, the only time you get your number called is when something bad happens. Well, today I'm going to make sure that they get the shout-out, their numbers get called, they were winners. Now, as far as losers, we're going to have to talk about the secondary for the most part. Be on the lookout for those. We're going to be doing a lot of film study this week at how mistakes led to 5 touchdowns for Russell Wilson and new interceptions. You know, and then of course, you know, you got a guy with a case of a drop. He's going to be on the losers list. You know, and I, honestly, this is my last edit that I'm worrying about right now. I'm wondering, do I add one more person to this losers list that was throwing the ball today? Whether it will be Ben Roethlisberger or Landry Jones or nobody. That's what you'll find out if you read the losers column. But also, I'm giving some honorable mentions out. There were some players that didn't get to finish the game, or one player in particular didn't get to finish the game that I thought was playing really well. And another guy that took his place and stepped up, in my opinion. Not enough to be a winner necessarily in the way the column works, but certainly a guy that you got to mention. So that's what you can expect from the honorable mention. It should be up, I'd say, within the next 10 to 15 minutes. Go check it out on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com.
Wow, that is one heck of a teaser there, people. I'll tell you what, if that doesn't get you to check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, I don't know what will. That wraps up our show for the evening. Unfortunately, it's a somber one as the Steelers lose 39-30 to the Seattle Seahawks in Week 12. They try to right the ship next week in Week 13 at home against the Indianapolis Colts. Make sure you join us on Wednesday for The Standard is the Standard. I'll be hopefully joined by co-host Lance Williams as we diagram everything that happened against the Steelers' loss to the Seahawks and look forward to the upcoming game against the Colts. Maybe Chris and Danny Bostic will have a Steelcast podcast for those podcast fans out there. Make sure you check out BehindTheSteelCurtain.com early and often for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. For Chris, I'm Jeff. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Boo.